Hello and welcome again to my YouTube podcast series, Dinesh Guarda YouTube podcast, powered by openbusinesscouncil.org and citiesabc.com. And as we've been going through this fantastic series of interviews, which I'm very privileged to host, we've been actually bringing personalities from a lot of different areas of research, science, academy, business, technology. And I think the major focus on this series is really portrayed what is going on in our world, and as well, how can we cope with the challenge coming, especially from technology and business, but as well, how we can actually create a narrative that is, I would say, more sustainable, more powerful in the sense of not going through the, I would say, the catch-22, or at least the negative elements of narratives that we're facing today in our times. We are in a fantastic time, and there's a lot of great things, but there's a lot of challenges as well. So today I want to welcome to our series someone that I met recently, but I was very fascinated by his thinking and capacities. And I'm very excited to welcome to our series, as I mentioned before, in the bio, and then we'll continue going through this interview, Alistair Wilson-Goth, that is the founding partner of 50 International. So Alistair, a privilege to have you here.
Pleasure. My pleasure entirely. Thank you.
So Alistair, so you have a fantastic background, but it's not a conventional box background. Yeah. So yeah. You have both the legal structure and the education, and you are as well managing, you work right now in the 50, the founding partner of 50 International. You are a specialist in international tax and structuring advice, and the managing partner of Reed and Dyer LLP. And at the same time, you are as well a researcher that has a very successful newsletter that looks at a lot of challenge when it comes to geopolitical, technology, innovation, and a lot of things related to how we see the world. So I would like to start, first of all, so in your education, in your background, how did it start, this curiosity, and this as well, multiplicity of things that made who you are today? If I would ask, how do you own this? What would be the background that would made who you are today?
I suppose one of the key drivers was my own family. My grandparents set up a very significant interests, and that was largely destroyed by taxation after the war, when there was very high levels of tax. We need to rebalance the books, and the advice they could have taken wasn't taken at that time, so did us a huge amount of damage. And so I see firsthand the neglect from not understanding strategically what assets one has in terms of geopolitics and tax, and the impact that life can have upon, you know, previously built up interests and businesses. So we lost our family home, and which was built in 1380, a bit of a loss. And so life changes and you move on. But that's one of the principal drivers. And I've seen it because of friends and family, similar circumstance, the need to think strategically. And if you don't, and you don't try and anticipate or understand the wider world, then it can have a devastating impact upon not only the wealth created in one generation, but passed on through many generations in time.
So there's a sense of history there. Do you want to just use that case study to explain your history, your family, and how it made who you are? Because I understand losing a family house, especially with that history, it's quite a very, I would say, changed someone's life, but at the same time, probably creates other
opportunities, huge opportunities. Yeah. So after that, I was at, in my early 20s, I was in a part of the world which was somewhat war-torn and was somewhat challenging. And that's when I did my training, which is principally in economics and history. But then after that, I spent 10 months living with a Bedouin in Saudi Arabia. And I lived in a mud house and with no windows, just shutters and bars. I was the first European to live in that particular part of the world. And I really, really lived there. So scorpions, matawas, having run-ins with, and sandstorms, basic food. And this is in a world that not many people can really even relate to. So it's something drew me to the desert, and living in the desert teaches you a lot of things on survival and understanding oneself in relationship to the world.
Wow, that's another fantastic story in itself, because of course, since then, Saudi became probably the most powerful, or one of the most powerful countries in the world.
Absolutely.
With all these contradictions. Yeah, so let's look at your career. So from a family challenge to become a global authority in tax and different areas, and as well a researcher. So tell us a bit some of your career highlights and what you would like to present to our audience.
I think one of the great takeaways from, you know, I've been involved in a big US trust with beneficiaries in the UK. I was in part of that family for a period. And you realize the benefit of really good advice and expertise. And so as I developed and built in time a practice, I always rely upon barristers. I like people that know the law and the case law, both in its single jurisdiction, but also dual jurisdiction. So I base the practice on working with people that are a lot brighter than I am. And all I want to be able to do is think through the questions, think through the questions that don't, it's not always, when you have a matter to deal with, it's not always the principal matter people think it is. It always is in a context. It's always in, what is the strategy? Where are you going from here if you can resolve an answer? So that has built up over decades. I'll be working with very bright people, working with families and individuals, and business people that have an issue, but then how do you see it in a much broader scenario? So strategy. Why are you doing what you're doing? Where are we going to with this? And being able to ask those questions in a very neutral and benign environment. So look at what's going on. Where are we moving? And that in turn brings you on to geopolitics. And now, of course, it brings you into climate change and living in that sort of, in these sort of environments.
So that's a very strong direct point, and I think we always need to trust the ones that can actually give us this. So, in terms of, I think let's start going through the basics. So, if you can tell us about what is 50 International, and as well your law firm, and what you do on the two organizations.
Okay. So 50 International is in the old sense a college of expertise. Think of something like Oxford or Cambridge. So in the collegiate environment, you have expertise that fundamentally dine together. So in dining once a week or more often, they then sit down and share ideas, share their research, share their thinking. And that is really invaluable, to have people that you trust and know, have a lot of experience and knowledge. So we're able in 50, because of the amazing skills we have in visas, education, cyber, close protection, reputation, I mean, everything you can think of, to be able to pick up the phone or sit down with someone and say, look, client X has come with this particular problem. How do we resolve it? Because you need to be able to look at things in the whole. And that is really, really important. So 50 is very much a college of expertise. It's not a formal organization. It's not a partnership. But it's people we've known and worked with over many years that have that sort of expertise available. So we have an open conversation and in a trusted environment where we can really look at a case, often on no-names basis, but nevertheless, we can look at it quite frankly. This has happened, that's happened, that could happen. How do we look at it? And nothing stands alone. In the world of tax, it impacts visas, impacts how many days you spent in a country, access, then you look at possible divorce, you look at educational issues, you look at all of those factors, make a strategy for what you're doing. It's not just, I have an issue, I'm trying to sell a house, or I want to buy something, or I want to bring money in or take money out. What's a strategy? So Reed and I, we're not a law firm per se, but we are an interface between barristers in particular. So we're able to instruct barristers in real fact and circumstance. So if we go to a barrister, we've got quite a fair reach of different chambers, different specialists, say, and we prepare a detailed analysis of a person or a family's background, the assets, how they're acquired, and what they're trying to achieve. And this is on a point-by-point detailed instruction to counsel with all the supporting documentation. So they know this is a true reflection of a person's situation. And we spend a lot of time on that. And then counsel is able to opine on that, to give an analysis, which then reviewed with the client, who is becomes a direct client of the barrister as well, which is cardinal. So the barrister answerable to the client. to a general law firm. It's the law firm answerable to the client, not the individual who gave the advice. And individuals move and go and they change, whereas a barrister is always there, short of death. And so having had that analysis, working with the client, we can then look at the process of implementation, and that's what we do. We combine all the moving parts, whatever may be required, with counsel's oversight to make sure the right analysis is implemented for the client. And because of that relationship, as time moves on and things change, legislation or family circumstances or business circumstances, then you come back to a known position. And that's really, really important.
So let's look at, one in touch, of course, both organizations, both of them complement each other because we have the research and we have, of course, a lot of information coming out of the 50 International. Yeah. And I know that you have your newsletter. I would like as well for you to highlight that. But we are in a very complex time. Of course, the geopolitics are a bit like a new, interesting to say less. But at the same time, we have two elements that never happened in history. Probably we have a bit of a AI open eye hour, and at the same time, a climate change open eye hour. So these two things, of course, together with geopolitics, are changing everything we look at, the way we do business, the way we tax, and the way as well, if you are a company, how do you look at your present and your future? Because, okay, are you going to tax in the UK? Are you going to tax in Europe? Because in the end of the day, as well, the conventionality that we have about Western world is completely fragmented, not to say broken. So how do you see this purely from your expertise in terms of legal and tax advice, but as well in terms of the research?
Because things are moving very quickly, and there's a lot of energy that's shooting around in terms of de-enveloping the old way of doing things and re-enveloping, but also understanding the importance of standards in terms of sort of a democratic process where the voice is heard and how do you engage that voice? How do you bring it in? People are caught up in that, as well as, I mean, in recent history, we had the financial collapse of 2010 broadly. Then we had the financial cost of COVID. And now we have the war in the middle of Europe. And on top of that, we have the cost hidden or clear, or growingly clear, of climate change. And this is an immense financial burden. And how do you maintain a society in that context? The only way to do that is by having an efficient tax system. And so what we do a lot, if you look at us, we do short postcards, and literally postcards, they're 480 words, give or take, which look at the impact potentially of climate change, geopolitics, and taxation. So people to be aware of reporting, of data capture, and understanding the world they're actually in from that point of view and compliance. And also on top of that, we then look at the impact of geopolitics and on climate change in terms of migration. And if you look at things like the NASA and God Institute projections, you can see those parts of the world that are least affected or modeled to be least affected by climate change. And you want to be able to have an ability to reside in those countries. So how are you able to reside in them? It's not a matter of buying a house per se, but it's, are you compliant? Are you able to bank? What's your investment portfolio? What's it look like to the outside? Because everybody sees what you have. Does it look as if you are a valued member of that society? You want to look at your right to be in that country in terms of visas. You want to look at in terms of your banking. Are you able to bank inside the country? And what's your profile like? Are you someone I want to have inside our country? And these questions people are going to face more and more as the stress on the haven environments becomes more and more pressing. And it's understanding the world you're in there because it's moving very fast.
Question right now on the follow-up of what you just said, because you were very synthetic. And I love that both your newsletter and all your work is extremely synthetic. So the challenge right now is, okay, there's big corporations, medium and small. And the world economy as well, the velocity, like you mentioned before, it's more crazy than ever. It seems like it's just going to accelerate even more, especially with AI. But at the same time, the business are not fast enough. Any business take years to be created, and unfortunately to be destroyed is very fast. And at the same time, we have a parallel of different financial systems, legal systems that are becoming increasingly more complex. But at the same time, more conflictive. We have the decentralized world of crypto, blockchain, and this is still in early days, but it's already creating quite disruption. Then we have, of course, the Western world with the central banks and all the stuff. And then we have, of course, emerging markets with a lot of other different things. It's purely on the financial side. Then on the technology side, there's only two sides. It's the big players and the rest of the world. And then on the climate side, we have, of course, at the moment, a big chaos of, first of all, even translating the challenge that we face in the general population. And so all of this creates a kind of a tsunami of, I would say, of lack of understanding and simplicity for business leaders around the world, which makes, at the end of the day, when people don't understand, okay, they will survive or strive. And eventually they will try to follow the rules that are active for them short term, and they will try to go. So you've been seeing this. You have, of course, a wealth of experience. How will you look at this scenario? Because I think this is probably the first complexity of what you're facing right now that is unique. Okay, because even if you go to the open iron moment, in the end of the day, there was two parts of the world, and these two parts of the world were fighting with each other, but at least there was one part of the world that was more or less agreeing. And now we have a lot of fragmented parts of the world. And of course, the challenge of the I would say that everything that is happening is really quite complex, because in the end of the day, if you go to a small business in any place of the world, they really don't understand about digital, much less about AI, even if they might be using it indirectly on their phones or stuff like that. So how do you see this, and as well all the tax that comes? I know that is a big question, but I know that you look at this.
Really? I'm wondering where to start, really. Let's have some random thoughts. AI, of course, is a huge tool. And if you think within the last 100 years or so, the move away from really intense, hard physical labor and factory production and the moving of goods, all that's largely gone. And so, and also we, in terms of the new industry, that is really not labor intensive. So if you think of the growth of industry between, let's say, First World War up to probably the 60s, 70s, you had huge opportunities to make money, whether in car manufacturing plants, in industrial complexes. There was a big demand for skilled labor. And that was very, how do you put the right word in this? It was very energizing. People could earn a lot of money, and they could build a home, educate their children, and you began to have the rise basically to middle class. That is eroding quite quickly, and AI systems and robotics are moving in. At the same time, we have depopulation. Italy today announced its lowest level of birth in a year ever. And so Italy is now facing that challenge of saying our children have to be immigrants, which then goes against what happens to your culture, what happens to your life, what happens to the quality of the work that you need, and how do you pay for all that? So that you're right, there's a huge disconnect. So how can you achieve wealth? In other words, the ability to have more than a month or two or three in the bank balance so that you can pay and go forward and plan and invest. These become really significant problems, especially when they're stressed in the way they're stressed. And at the same time, you speak about crypto. Well, crypto is actually, under tax rules, is an asset. It is a capital asset, which you're trading, is not a currency. Despite what people may think, it is deemed in that way an asset. And so it's caught under income tax and capital gains tax. And also everything's tracked. So coming back to AI, there are about 40 different tax jurisdictions all sharing information and analyzing your living patterns, analyzing how you fly, the assets you buy, the property, the cars, et cetera, banks disclose. And so the need to be aware that your tax footprint is actually very, very discernible. And so you need to be very compliant, understand the world you're living in as we move forward. So you want to protect assets the best you can. Understand really carefully if you are nomad, are you a real nomad or not? How are you holding your assets? And how are you banking those assets? We use quite a lot now, not so much banks, but we use sort of financial platforms, because they're more contained and more robust for individuals. They're still compliant. They still have to disclose, but it's easier to bank in those environments. So a lot of these conflicting trends are all coming at the same time, as in fact we've seen. You know, Kuwait hit 70. about a month ago. We've had the highest recorded summer ever. And briefly, according to what I've read, Iran, in one airport, hit 81 for 1-2 days. You know, this is unsustainable. And if this continues, then people will have to move. You know, otherwise you stay as Kuwait announced, you know, those with breathing or heart problems, don't go outside. Stay in your air-conditioned bubble, if that's how you're going to live. And I've known what it's like to live in the desert. I've seen real heat, and I've known that in the face of, you know, no water and seeing sandstorms coming. So, and that was in a more benign time. But without being, you know, over, I don't want to be hysterical about this, but, it, you know, be aware of where we are. And so it needs a whole new skill set of understanding the reality of the world, where things attract this new technology, and how do I build wealth and have security in this world at the same time. You know, Europe at the moment has about 50 million empty properties because of massive depopulation. We've all read about Spain and Italy, but also across a lot of mainland Europe and certainly the old CIS countries. So there's room for people to move into those and to re-engage with the world using 5G, 6G, and time, you know, Android delivery of drone delivery of goods and services, in fact, movement. So there will be a new world, but it's how, in an adaptive way, in this haven approach. And people need to think about what skills I need, and the reality of where they are, because the world has changed irrevocably. But it needs to be embraced. You need to understand, you know, the exciting great things as well as the challenging things.
So there's a lot of stuff in what you said.
I'm so sorry. Yes, it's a bit of a brain dump.
Question. My question was massive as well. So, and it was on purpose. I know that you can actually summarize things amazingly. Mm. That's why I love to discuss with you. So let's touch the climate change, because this is something that is not just human, it's human in nature. And it's something that is very, very, of course, there's the part of all the climate change and sustainability, carbon neutral, and all the things related with that, which is a big right now open door, because most of governments don't have established rules. And I would like to as well to hear your rules, at least how do you suggest for startups and business? Most of my audience are entrepreneurs and the technologies people or people in business that have ambition on technology. Is how we tackle this from our business ethics and conduct, and as well deontology. The second is our society. How can we tackle this? Because we had private talks where you discussed some really drastic measures, and I think really, like you just said, in some countries, this is really creating massive disruption, and it seems like it's just beginning. And part of this is created by. Or actually mostly created by human, but as well, nature keeps disrupting. Okay. In the end of the day, a tsunami or an earthquake is not really the fault of humans. Okay. So it's much more complex, and you cannot put, I think probably the challenge when it comes, and I'm not an expert by any means in climate change.
None of us are.
I don't want to be, but the challenge is really that it's complex. It's complex to look at these things. And at the same time, how do they solve it? Because, of course, most of the governments have to think about how do you solve the problems with debt of COVID, how do you solve the problems, and a lot of so much. So first part of the question is, how do you cope with this? And because you had an exit in taxes and the business side of it, how at least some positive level of this. And second, of course, I know that you have some more drastic measures and you've been thinking a lot about this. I would like to hear your opinions.
In climatic-wise, most of the damage is done already. The CO2 is in the atmosphere. And that is a defining point. And CO2 and the atmosphere knows no national border boundaries. So it relies upon the flow of geothermal currents, you know, sky rays, where the river, you know, water is lifted up in one continent, dropped on another. All those are changing. So in terms of our adopting new technology, that is kind of nice. And sorry, I don't mean that in a belittling sense, but it's too little too late. So the only way to fix this is by geoengineering. And ironically, we need quantum computing and AI to start to cleave through that to find what are the dangers and the opportunities in geoengineering. Because you have to tackle the planet as a whole. So one country slashing its oil, very nice, but actually it makes no difference. In real terms, other than it potentially has some degree of slowing down, but it's minute. There's so much out there that the damage has been done. So it will be, I think, technologically wise, we have to act as a world, and we have to think, how do we actually geoengineer? And there are risks with that, because this is non-linear. And so in answer to your question, yes, great new technology. It's transformative. It enables people to do things. You know, the what's happened to electric motors, what's happened with drone transportation. And we'll look at medicine, you know, the speed of being able to design drugs that fit not only racial profiles, but also sexual profiles, in fact, and in fact can design drugs to the individual or that type of person from a genetic point of view. That's extremely exciting. And so people are living a long time. They don't die anymore. You know, there was a time when you had one or two heart attacks, and that was, you were gone. Cancer used to be a complete death sentence, and that's gone as well. People still die, obviously, but people live a high quality of life for a long time. Plus, of course, the vast amount of work being done on life extension and quality of life. So these are huge transformative forces. And like all things, they all hit their Model T moment, when it becomes the Model T car is just produced everywhere. And so open technology will produce a lot of opportunities business-wise, and how to deliver this and how to trust those sort of systems to bring the answers. Meanwhile, globally, we have to think about geoengineering to protect our lives as best we can. And all these things we're doing in terms of the new tech and reforestation and all that goes with it is helping. But it's also helping not just dealing slowly with the problem, but actually a new way to engage with the world. It transforms our thinking and our lifestyle and the way we operate and work together and live together, as much as having some impact on the globe. But we're torn in those regards.
So let's come back to the first part of the question. So as a business at the moment, so depends, of course, on the size of the business. Most of people right now have to start paying for carbon neutral credits to get some certifications and stuff like that. So let's look purely on the day-to-day. Okay, you mentioned the big picture. The day-to-day, what would be the advice? And for instance, what are you doing from your firm? Because I think one of the challenges right now is we have to get rules. We have to get some pipeline to start tackling this. And it's obvious that the governments alone cannot do this. It's our responsibility, all of us, because we are all affected by this. So I would like to see purely in your heads as a legal expert, and as well as a firm that is dealing with organizations and companies that have to tackle these problems. What would be the advice? Of course, this is with all the disclaimers that top level you would suggest to people.
Well, obviously, you're looking at, first of all, how do you deploy your profits? How do you invest those in a way that is going to be really supportive and but also breaking new territory? So it's not just avoiding oil, but it actually is going to things that are really going to help the new technologies, the way in to get people operating. Then you're looking at basic productivity. Are you able to work from home? Are you able to work remotely, but still be productive? Which is a key issue as well. A lot of people have signed off mentally, signed off physically. So they cruise at home and the productive levels can be quite low. So how do you maintain that sense of urgency? So people need to be incentivized. So firms can look at ways to incentivize their staff by way of profit participation, of allowances on share schemes, but also by enfranchisement. How do you enfranchise the people you're working with? So they like the old cooperative model. There is a dividend. There's a benefit, a clearly enshrined benefit. If you work hard and support us in our common thinking and our objectives, then you will benefit. And that's enshrined in the Constitution. And it's of the company, of the way it thinks and operates, its governance. And that's very important, how you bring people on and say, yes, you are working for a company, but actually you will share those profits. And there's evidence of that, of entrepreneurs that are enfranchising the people they're working with and also lifting their wage. But it's a balancing act. It's a quid pro quo. You know, you have to deliver, you have deliverables, you have to pay attention to what we're trying to achieve here. And you therefore will get rewarded and will get incentivized. So that is a really key thing as well, that you understand the proper benefits of that, you know, from a tax perspective, or the write-offs and the benefits you can have by participating in the right sort of structure so that people are enfranchised. And of course, then you come back to how you move, how, when you are working from home, yes, your carbon footprint's reduced, but are you really working from home? Are you really working remotely? And how effective is that? And how do you, so you have to allow your footprint, or your fingerprint, basically, with your computer to be monitored and logged. This is a proper contract, but you have to be enfranchised to see that.
So you touch a lot of things that partly are the concept of ESG for people listening to us: environment, social, and governance. So are you, let's look at this in particular, because I know that there's a lot of people that favor ESG and people that are against, especially in the US with the ultra-liberalism and different areas on this. So how do you see this concept? Because partly you touch on that on the ESG, and the ESG is a big concept as well. There is no really conventional approach towards that. Are you, is something that you recommend? And if so, or not, how do you look at this, especially as a way of solving the problems you mentioned?
I'm always wary of terms that act as some sort of salve. So you say, we're ESG compliant. Well, what the hell does that mean? You know, how do you evidence it? Show me what you're talking about. You know, water in a cup is water in a cup. No water in the cup, you're thirsty. Show me what you're doing. And so I'm very wary of labels. I'm very wary of you know, stickers on letterheads. What I want to see is how can you show that? And there's ways to do that. You can measure in terms of, you know, am I really enfranchising people? Am I really engaging? So if we have profits, you know, are they being used for something that is really supportive and important, either locally or somewhere else? You know, you have the power to engage with, because of social media and because of the internet. You can engage with a remote community somewhere, properly engage with it. Don't have to go there per se. You don't have to burn carbon to get there, but you can show the benefits of it. And when I was in Rwanda, I looked at the amount of white light at night. Now, kerosene burns yellow. White photovoltaic systems burn white. And you can see the amount of transformation. So a remote area can easily have a very cheap fridge. It can charge a phone. It can give light for people to study. And it's relatively cheap. And so are you participating in that? Are you really engaging with the world? Are you relating yourself to part of the world that needs help and assistance, that you've got the resources to deploy? And then you give reason to life. Because a lot of the problem is despair and a lack of reason and a sense of being divorced from the world. Social media is a terrible thing in many respects. You know, how many likes do I have? How many rabbit holes can I get brought into to seeing sort of cats dance on tables or children dancing around or sunsets? It's a distraction. It's lovely to see it, but there are real things to focus on. So it's how your business and how your life and how you take responsibility. You know, we're in a situation, you know, my Android's beside me here. You know, this damn thing could run a small country. You know, and it's more power in that than took the first missions to the moon. It is extraordinary. It is just quite extraordinary what you can do. And by really looking and engaging with the world, the resources at your disposal, and making clear decisions, I am going to engage. I'm going to look at the income I have. I can look at fractional ownership of shares. I can use the tax wrappers that I'm given. I'm going to say to my colleagues, you know, let's have some participatory benefit inside the work that I'm in. Let's talk to the owners of the business. Come on, you know, let's put all the cards on the table here. How do we do this?
Let's come back to, and this is a very important thing for me. So I am quite a person curious, and I always want to learn. And I struggle to find a lot of consensus about what you said. So, for instance, your areas of expertise, I think, are important to any startup around the world, any business, because at the moment, for instance, if I look at my own company that I created and the companies that I'm running, a lot of these issues is really small things that are not conventional. And because of that, all my life, a lot of mistakes that were created. Even sometimes you can go to the edge because of a small mistake, like your family. Lost the house probably because the tax
were. We lost a lot else. We trust a lot else. Trust me, we were wiped out. Yeah,
exactly. And it's just really important. It touches everyone, and whatever you are in the world. And this is actually biggest challenge of all, probably in our civilization moment. But is, of course, it's in one end, we have fantastic things that never happened because, for instance, if you make a parallel, I always like to make a parallel. If you look at the Spanish flu in the beginning of the 20th century, according to different notes or statistics, around 200 to 300 people died, 300 million people died. And there was
more
around
that.
And the very important thing, there was only around 1 billion people at the time.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. You're absolutely right.
Now we have seven to eight billion. Mm-hmm. And during COVID, less than, I think, the macro numbers are our...
Very small.
Yes.
But percentage-wise and number-wise,
So that means, as a civilization, we achieve a fantastic... Immense. Yeah, so the coronavirus death toll worldwide is 6 million, okay?
Yeah.
Of course, disrupt the entire global economy, but at the same time, the economy kept moving. Okay. And so in one end, this is a very positive stuff. Okay. And I think that's the challenge right now, is that we have so much positive things on that level, but at the same time, we have all the things we're talking here. So from your research and coming back to the nitty gritty of things, how do you see that the research you do with the 50 international, let's look at practical stuff and then the big questions. So you are looking at solutions for companies to deal with taxes, international areas, and so forth. But give us a bit more of that input, and just for people listening to us, 50international.com. That is an organization you can find in the website, and you can find as well all the different areas related with the family offshore and the UK assets, mostly from the UK law, but as well a lot of practical stuff around this. So let's look at this question from the nitty-gritty of the challenge and the opportunities that we're facing right now.
We always get our clients to think strategically. So a business is not a business, it's a business. What's that going to be like in 5 years' time? What's the family going to be like in 5 years' time? What's anything going to be like in 5 or 10 years' time? Take the longer-term view. And then think about, it's not just the initial question. So when you think about how you structure yourselves, you think then in the context of that situation. People move, divorce, death, wealth is created, wealth is lost. How do you protect all that? How do you see it? And also certainly for families, we do quite a lot on the legacy in terms of how did you make your money? What's the family history? But friends of mine, you know, they're from Cyprus, and they showed a very clear situation. One of the family members, the Gestapo were there, and they machine gunned a number of people in the village. And this one woman survived because she wasn't at that place at that time by pure fluke. And you look at, and then of course they went through the war between Turkey and Cyprus and the problems there. And they've written that down, and they have family members talking about it to camera. So that is a legacy for people to understand. I am X of Y generation of this particular time, but my roots have gone through these traumas. So you engage families with their past and understand what can go wrong, things that you had no idea that could ever go wrong. You know, I was in Anne Frank House in Holland about 2 months ago, and we had a private presentation of the history of that time. I had no idea that Jews were not allowed to have beds. I didn't know that Jews weren't allowed to shop. I'd read a lot of it. But then we saw how that worked and saw that Anne Frank was on the last train out. And if they'd missed that last train, she'd be alive and her descendants would be alive. And so it's the randomness of life, being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And it's important so people understand vulnerability. So in terms of someone comes to me, you know, I've got a property which I, you know, is held offshore. How do I bring it back onshore? How do I do it legally and correctly? How do I remodel my portfolio? How do I bring money into the UK per se legally? How do I understand the non-domicile rules? How do I build a business in that context? How do I organize myself in terms of participation of the family? How do I use alphabet shares? So I'm setting up a new company. I want to engage my children and grandchildren and other family members and indeed employees. How do I use shares that limit, give access to reward if I so choose, if they're engaging properly, but also it enables us to stop people having money if actually it's not appropriate. So you get all these levels of thinking and then get a good barrister to say, okay, let's implement this plan. Let's understand the rules and the law to do this. so you can protect the assets as well in the right, in the legal way. So a lot of what we do is strategic. And then you have that, we have the visa piece. We're dealing with a number of cases on education. How do you get into the system? How do you engage? How do you make sure that you're a wealthy individual with their children? How do you make sure the children are actually working? How do you make sure that someone is mentoring, how watching what their progress actually is, as well as having a great time? You know, the world has to be enjoyed, but also it has to be worked with. So a lot of these other things are built into our modeling. And in 50, we're able to bring that combined resource for families and people and businesses.
And this, I'm thinking about it because this is a key element. I think everyone listening to us should look at this. So let's look at practical stuff. I think we can go through the questions, but I like to go to the practical stuff. So especially the, so my channel is about business and technology. And when you look at any startup right now, is of course, is based on business that have international footprint and can use the internet for generating anything. So, of course, Rob, most of your clients are probably bigger corporate family offices, but we have, I'm sure, all kinds of clients and partners. But
also,
For the purpose of the coming back to the channels and the channel and the topics that we have here, so from a perspective of international law and especially everything happening with the tech system, which at the moment any business is a tech business, whatever we want it or not. I'll especially look at let's look at the first question is tax analysis, which is one of the areas. How can we work, especially for instance, you start talking about your experience that in your early days, you start with the story of your experience in Saudi. So Saudi, of course, in the last decades became a powerhouse. And of course, as well, trying to position themselves as a leader on technology. And of course, building massive megapolis that are really probably the most cutting edge experiences done in terms of urban future or present things, especially probably after the pyramids, let's put it that way. So how do you look at especially the part of the tax analysis when you do a business, if you are a UK startup or an European startup, with all the complexity of tax that exists in Europe? And of course, if you go to Africa, if you have a business, of course, you can use with the likes of Stripe for payments if you are a software as a service business, but it's very complex. And at the same time, it's a trial and error. And of course, before companies come to a company like yours, they probably will have to have some cash to be prepared for that. But what would be the advice for companies that want to, of course, come to you, but as well that are learning and doing their work? Because I think that's the kind of audience that I have here and that I want people to learn. And I think everyone needs to learn about this.
Well, actually, it's relatively simple in a way. It's where are you resident? You know, at the end of the day, it's about quality of life. So where is the individual resident? So from a tax perspective, get that as the first point. And then whatever business is, where are you going to base it? Because if you're resident in a country, then you have an issue of what's called control and direction. So if your company is somewhere else, because you're controlling and directing it, then you bring it back into the country where you started from. So often start with something that's very clear and very simple. Understand where you're living, and then you understand the tax rules around it. And then you can look at where you're going to grow. When you start to grow, then you look at, do I have a branch office? How do I hold the intellectual property? But then you think also in terms of, I want to be seen to be compliant, because the public face is on everything. And so don't get too clever. Because clever always gets complex, and complex always goes difficult, and difficult always fails. Unless you have massive projects, you know, profits rather, and you know, the likes of, basing yourself in Ireland for a huge tech company. But we're talking about very small stuff now. So look at your residency, look at what you achieve where you are. And if you're going to move, move. But don't do it in half measures. So the fundamentals are there. Where you're resident, where are your clients, and where's your intellectual property held? Where's the machinery held? And get some simple advice about that you can do without any complexity. And then you can look at your business model, and then you can monitor it and say, right, we need to have a review when you hit a certain position. But a lot of the basic thing we put in place just at the start, and it doesn't cost a lot.
So preparation is the key element.
Preparation. So preparation. And understand where you are.
Yeah, that's very
important. Residency-wise, lifestyle, vital important, yeah.
So let's go right now again to some of the things, and I think touching a bit areas related with your newsletter and the different things you guys have been doing. So I think, first of all, tell us how your newsletter works. You mentioned already that there is a very synthetic one. What people can find for that, because I think it's a great tool for people that want to know about what is happening and so forth. Let's start by that.
They're very simple. They're basically a postcard, literally the old-fashioned postcard. It's less than 500 words. And they come out on a random basis, something that takes my fancy or something I read I want to remind people about. So they invariably have some sort of historical context, a bit of a twist in them. But I just want people to engage and to think. At the end of the day, I'm just a bloke, different to any other chap out there, just writing my thoughts down. But I want to find a way to get people to engage and to think. So that's how they're written on that basis. And they're just called postcards. If you go on a website, the top right-hand corner, you'll see postcard is written. And you can click on that and you can see there's a number and they come out random basis. We're also doing quite a big PowerPoint presentation on climate change and the implications of. And that will look at how we reach out to people with that as well.
Fantastic. And thank you. So this is in 50international.com. You have the thoughts. And if you go to this, you get all these informations. And the postcard, effectively, I will put, I'll ask the team as well to put all the links. It's really interesting. And for instance, you have all the different things from historical nuances from mixed with different areas. So that's very beautiful, written and synthetic here. So coming back to these postcards, and of course, coming back to the report you're doing about climate change, what would be, you've been doing this for some time, actually, I'm sure that you're going to compile this as a book because there's a lot of great things here. But what would any kind of case study, any kind of postcard do you want to highlight? Because from the titles you have here, there's a lot of different things that are very important for us and for everyone listening and doing business.
It's all of them have their role, I suppose. In terms of tax reporting, which is one of the main things, look at Five Eyes as quite a key one. And the last one we did, He Who Would Command the Tide, those two, and actually Walls of Glass. It shows a degree of reporting and the degree of tracking of information about individuals. And don't get worked up by it. It's just a fact of life, but therefore just know what the world you're actually in.
Fantastic. So let's go right now to the report about climate change. So I don't know if you want to share with us some of the findings, some of the things that you've been doing, and how you would listen to that. I know that we touched a bit on that, but just about the report itself, how it works, how can it be found, and so forth.
Well, basically, we haven't launched it yet. I get to the point where I'm sort of almost there. And then I think again, oh, wait a minute, let's just look at the new information that's coming out. It's really understanding what we've taken is the NASA projections and the Goddard Institute, somewhat dated now. They did a model of it, but it's proven to be fairly accurate, showing the impact on air temperatures across the globe going forward. And we've taken snapshots in that. Unfortunately, the model originally was put together, we'd hit 1.5 by about 2050. We're going to hit 1.5 before the end of the decade, if not next year. And it's the speed of change that is most concerning and most sobering in terms of that. And then what we'd look at after that, I mean, Gaia, are you familiar with Gaia Vince's work? Nomad Century?
No. Well, Gaia I heard Vince about it, is, but if you could tell
it's honest, well worth looking at it. She is the environmental correspondent for the Financial Times, if I get that correct. And very learned piece, looks at the implications of what's happening. But also the latter part of the book is showing there's hope. You have to understand the world in which you're in. But it's a really good cold dunk into the world around us and what's happening. And I would strongly recommend it. And then it's a matter of looking at the science, looking at the reports that are coming out. NASA has probably the greatest collection of data mining on the planet anywhere in the world, both satellite and tertiary. And their analytics are very, very good. And so that gives you the context. The thing that's thrown everybody is the speed. And we keep on reading about the highest summer record. We've just looked at the Antarctic, the amount of lack of ice you know, this is fast. And so it's a matter of thinking, you know, this is not something for 20, 30 years away. We think 5 to 10 years. What's going to be happening? Let me give you some context. Second World War, within 7 years, it was, and I've got to be careful what I say, the benefit of the war against horrific cost was a total transformation of industry. So in 7 years, we had the computer, we had penicillin, we had logistics, we had new ways of manufacturing. It transformed everything. And if anything, just look at the logistics that came out of the Second World War and the Normandy landings. It was incredible what they did at that time. Radar, I mean, everything changed in 7 years. And we need to think of the same sense of urgency. And unfortunately, we get used to climate change. It's not an enemy. It's not bombing us at night. It's not attacking us. You know, this time last year, a third of Pakistan got swept away in floods. And we forget about it. We read about forest fires. We look at, you know, now Australia is coming into its summer, and we look at, you know, the forest fires re-emerging there. And it becomes a noise in the background. We don't actually, it's not hitting us in the face. And we need to have also not only awareness of that, which we're trying to put across in our presentation, but also, look, you can't hide from this, and just don't be depressed by it. It's just a challenge we face. Other generations face other challenges, whether it's Napoleonic War or whether with whatever, as you said, you know, quite rightly, the influenza epidemic, you know, or the recession. It was horrific for a lot of people, but we got through it. And we are remarkable people once we engage with life, once we really say, okay, come on, how do we find an answer to this? And we will. We found an answer to COVID, and we found it really, really fast. You know, the Crick's Institute and all the buddies that came together, exploring information, AI, computer technology, to analyze this virus and all this of COVID rather, and say, okay, how do we find an answer? We did it very quickly. And so now how do we do the same thing with the planet? How do we geoengineer? How do you look at both in terms of being compliant in your own lifestyle, but also into how can I support, how can I enhance what's going out there? Engage in a conversation, don't hide from it. So that's what we're trying to do, is give people a reference point. At the same time, say, this is what's going to happen. This is what we can do to address it. How do you think about it? And the last line in our presentation actually is, enjoy life. It's precious. Every day is a blessing. Every single day is a gift from God. Having time to stop and smell the flowers. Having time to say hello. Having time to say, how are you? And mean it. The curse of social media is we sit staring at a screen, and we forget how to talk to people, forget how to smile, forget to be able to look at, does that person need some help? Just crossing the road, picking something up. These tiny, tiny things are so important. Engage with love. Engage with a smile. Yeah, there are problems, but also be a person, be a human. So that's what our presentation is trying to put across. It's a work in progress. I hope to have it finished by the end of this year.
Thank you so much. It's inspiring words, and actually more important than ever, especially, like you said, in the middle of all the noise, velocity and complexity of what we live. So I know that I'm conscious that we passed 1 hour, but I want to tackle probably the most complex part that you mentioned. So I'm not expecting you touch about climate change with geoengineering. Yeah. And the possibilities on this. So I would just, for people listening to us, so there's of course, just first of all, the what is geoengineering and our re-engineer. So just purely from a scientific perspective, geoengineering is highly controversial, but discussions of its feasibility are gathering pace as it impacts the extreme weather driven by climate breakdown, grip the planet. There is no global agreement on geoengineering, and the rules on what countries or business can do.
Yeah.
And I want to highlight something. Then I went, of course, to Harvard, which I think is a great source. And Harvard is mentioned. There's a couple of studies on this direction, but definitely, of course, at the end of the day, the re-engineering will be finding ways, like you mentioned at the beginning of the quals, to at least... pause or reverse a bit the melting down sure. that is happening in the poles, and of course all the mm-hmm. temperature. So from your studies, and of course you look at this not as a scientist, but as well as a legal law and as well business personality, how would you look at this? Because of course it's an interesting point, and we have of course all these, you mentioned social media at the moment, we have multiple layers of social media. There's social media noise that everyone has, and it creates a bit of digital obesity, like we had the television before. But then we have of course a lot of people in channels that pretend to have the absolute right, which is not my case for people listening to us at all. I have no
club.
Absolute truth. Yeah. And I think we agree on
if
that.
If only.
but what is interesting is really how can we look at these big topics without getting into this crazy stuff of COVID is wrong, or COVID was a fake, whatever the stuff, which I'm sorry, by the way, I'm not into that as well. But yeah. I would say just looking at this purely from two business people that have a huge curiosity, and of course that have expertise in their passion areas and in their business areas, and of course track record. I would like to touch that from that level. Of course, I've been having a lot of scientists here on this channel, and we'll continue having, but this is an interesting one. So mostly how we would look at this, and looking at this purely from a strategic level that can solve some of the problems. And the article I found is an article from January for 2022. For people listening, I'll try to put as well the link. There is reversing climate change with geoengineering, which is not my purpose of the question. I'm just using it as a source for contextualizing this question to you, Alistair.
Help me with maybe more specific about the question so I understand it.
Yeah, the question is, so you mentioned the importance of trying to look at climate change with something radical as geoengineering. And my question is, is this something that we should really look? And I'm talking.
We have no choice. We have no choice.
Okay, that's what I want. So can you?
It's as simple as that.
On that.
Yeah, the CO2 in the atmosphere is there. It doesn't obey national boundaries. Every nation, matter if we are, if UK become carbon neutral overnight, it will make no difference, because it's what's in the atmosphere. So we have to, on a collaborative basis, engage with AI, engage with the quantum computing as fast as we can get to it, and put in the massive amount of data and try and model it through. And we will make mistakes. You know, we're at war. We're at war with ourselves. It's what we created, and there will be collateral damage, unfortunately. But the threat is so immense and is so all-pervading that we have no choice. We have to do this. So we can look at our own conduct. We can look at moving to carbon neutral. We can look at engaging people with the new social dynamics. All those things are vitally important. But fundamentally, to cure it and cure it fast, or if not cure, but at least reduce or remove the weight of the threat, we have to geoengineer. And all these things, you know, micronuclear power stations, all this will help. But fundamentally, we have to get what's out there back in the earth. And how do we do it?
So, yeah, it's quite a big important. Of course, the consequences, first of all, do geoengineering it's something that would be extremely risky and could destroy a building. Of course, we'd have to use, like you said, the AI. And by any means, I'm not an expert in these areas, but I'm just thinking the possibilities of this and the consequences as well. Because at the moment, the narrative that we have, and that's why I asked this question very specific, is the narrative that we have is that, okay, everyone right now has to stop troubling, has to stop, and there's a lot of pressure to politicians and to all the things, which is not going to solve the problem. That's my main question.
It won't solve it at all.
Exactly.
Even if the world stops traveling, as it did during the COVID time, you know, and logistics slowed down because of China and COVID there, it slowed it down. Minor input. There was no reversal. We have no choice. We have to be gutsy. We have to accept there's risk. And we have to say the only way we have is finding an answer. We have to use our intellect and our abilities, and we have to check and double check and trouble check, and then do the best we can. Because we cannot continue where we are. The impact on us all will be so significant. All the data is there, and it's moving fast. So we have to embrace it, and there will be risk. But we have to be pragmatic about it. We have to use our technology to embrace all the factors we possibly can and come to very clear decisions about it. And we accept, as you touched upon earlier, you know, there are forces abroad out there that are using social media against people. It's encouraging fear. It's encouraging distrust. And we know some of the drivers to that sort of malicious distortion on social media. But, you know, this is part of the scenarios you have to work with. We need to be able to put our analysis out there and to say, okay, let's test it. Let's compare it. And that's one of the great things it's done on all open source basis, and we can model and test. And the collaborative approach, that is the benefit of what we've achieved. But we have no choice, as I see it.
Wow. So I think for people listening to us, I think we passed on an hour. So I have just, so let's finish in a more positive level. I think two last questions. So you touched, of course, the importance of the simplicity and the things in life that are not, that don't cost anything. But let's summarize from your own experience, and this is another big question. So as someone that lost everything and rebuilt everything, or your family lose a lot of things because of mistakes that were not completely part of that, different things, we're not going through all the details, but what would be the advice? You touched already some advice for being conscious about where you're based, being conscious about different things, but a more concrete advice for, first of all, not to get this cynicism, because of course, when you have a statement like what you said, we can get in the extreme, okay, we'll just continue doing our stuff, but who cares? So how can we really make a change with what to do in an intelligent way? And I know that you're very conscious you touched that.
There are five basic things in the world. Five basic things. To have a roof over your head. To have food on your table. To have health. To have heat and warmth. And someone to say, I love you. Our greatest challenge is to say to each other, we love you. It's just that gift of love. And it's a smile in the street. It's seeing if someone's dropped something. It's offering an umbrella if it's raining. Engage with the world. Engage with the people around you. I know it sounds, I'm not answering the question perhaps in the way you anticipated. But engage with the world in a human way. Real social intercourse with people. Look people in the eye. See if you help, if they need help. Smile. Help someone read a map. Do the basic things. Your next door neighbor, have you spoken to them? Who do you see in the street? Do you say hello to a shopkeeper? Do you really say hello? When someone delivers food, do you really say hello? How are you? And mean it? Because if you do those things, the world changes. You feel better. The endorphins kick in you and kick in the people you've spoken to. And you're stronger for it. And you're more able to deal with the challenges you face. We have huge challenges. And it comes down to really basic things at the end of the day. It's just that engagement with one's immediate world. And everything else can build on top of that. If you are feeling empowered because you've been good to people, people are good to you. It's a law of nature. And then you can build your business. And then you have the bravery to ask the questions. Then you have the bravery to look at your business model. So the people working, how can I engage them in this model? And still have my profit and have my benefit as the originator, but share it. And then they feel empowered and they empower other people. So start with where you are right now. Really basic stuff. And everything else will build on top of that. The tax piece, the beneficial piece, the environmental piece. It all comes out of love at the end of the day. Really simple stuff.
Wise words and very inspiring. And I think, well, after this, there's a bit of silence that I think we all have to think about it, because it's really important and not forget these things and smile. Yeah. So I have one last question, and it's my last one.
Fire away.
That is a big one, but it's based in one of your postcards from the 27th June 2023. And of course, it's quite a big one, but I think it's important because it summarizes everything we discuss here. But it I want to leave the audience thinking about this. Mm. So. You start, I'm just going to quote parts of the postcard. I'm not going to read it all.
Sure.
Mostly you start by talking about born. I'll read, I quote parts of this and then I will take this.
Sure.
Born in Denmark in AD 1994, King Canute became King of England in 1016. Canute the Great ruled through. The Great ruled through effective governance based on the rule of law, there was one of the more notable non-domiciled residents.
Yes. Yeah.
And then from here you go, that in 2019, the OECD reported that some 40 tax administrations were in process of using artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
And then HMRC Connect system now connects 55 billion items of taxpayers' data, as it focuses on the difference between the tax payable and the amount actually collected, currently a negative 32 billion per annum.
Mm-hmm.
HMRC, as with all tax authorities, is under pressure to deliver efficiency and revenue. So I'll stop here. So mostly there's the parallel between King Canute, which was a non-domiciled king of England, and of course the tax system that we have that is starting to become managed by AI.
Yeah.
But even the AI is not consensual worldwide. So I think this summarizes, of course, we went through a lot of things, but I want to finish with a bit, how do you describe this challenge that we have? And actually very important, you finish. Some chronicles record King Canute seated on the shore of Tornay Island, being the site of his palace. Now known as the Palace of Westminster today, it is the home of our lawmakers, and Westminster was the island then, and to some it is still, rather apt in a way as it is here in today's palace, that legislation is past the harvest domicile and non-domicile digital footprints.
Yeah.
Not unlike archaeologists' findings fossilized early footsteps, our digital tax footprints are likewise there for all time. So this is a very big statement, very synthetic, but you touch a lot of things. And I know that I would like if you could synthesize this as our last question.
Basically, it's just saying that everything you do is tracked. Your flight is tracked, your spending, what you post on social media. They need to be efficient, the tax authorities, because they've got a lot of things to face, let alone geoengineering. So they will go after you. They will track what you're doing. So don't lie. You know, don't pretend that you're not tax resident. Don't pretend that you know, oh, no one's going to notice. You know, I've heard of stories where people think, oh, it's you know, I'm Bitcoin, Ethereum. You know, it's not tracked. I can buy a house. I can do this. I can do that. No, you can't. Because anything you translate from coinage on the internet into fiat, where you buy something, you physically have something, even a cup, that cup was bought. So everything manifests physically. So what I'm trying to say in that is, look, understand where you are, embrace where you are, get the right advice, tell me what I can and cannot do. And then you're at peace. You don't have to worry about a letter from coming through the letterbox. And understand that if you're going to be resident, be resident. If you're not going to be resident, don't be resident, but understand the rules. Just work with the rules. That's all it is. But that postcard will say to people, everything is tracked. And those footprints, Canute's footprints, were washed away as the waters went. But our footprints are not going to be washed away. But even his encounter with the rising tide changed Canute's behavior with his crown, which he never wore again, by legend, left on the altar. By the same token, we need to understand the world in which we're in and how we engage with it. And comply with it, but in a positive way, in a good way. Use the rules and smile.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor to have you here. I know that.
My pleasure. It's been a great. I've enjoyed our conversation very much. Thank you.
No, my pleasure. So for people listening, we'll put all the links. Please read the postcards because they are poetic, powerful, synthetic, and as well open a lot of doors. And as well, very wise words, please. Be transparent because positive as well.
Yeah,
there's a lot of opportunities, but you just need to be
realistic. Huge amount of opportunities, yeah. Do it with a smile. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Alistair. It's an honor.
My pleasure. Here.